Hello and welcome to this edition of Top of Mind Florida. I'm Michael Williams.
I'm Brian Crowley, just returned from Switzerland
and a great trip in Europe. That is without a doubt the worst accent I've ever heard.
I don't know. I thought it sounded pretty good.
And you need a hearing test. You had a great time in Switzerland?
I had a wonderful time in Switzerland with me and my four siblings. Good. So the five of us, we took over Switzerland for about 12 days, and they wanted us to stay.
Not with that accent, they didn't. I'm delighted you had a great time. You've been talking about the trip. Glad you had a great time.
Well, two of my sisters had never been to Europe. They've never left the country. Yeah. So for them, this was so amazing and so eye-opening, and they had just an extraordinary time, and Switzerland is a wonderful, wonderful place, and I highly recommend it.
Typical question that's asked of the person who just came back from a big vacation. What was your favorite day or spot?
Well, Basel is really great. You know, Art Basel, Art Basel. One day I'll learn how to pronounce Basel, even though I was there. Their museums are incredible. We had a wonderful time there. And I could picture myself living in Basel.
All right. Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Does your wife know yet?
She could probably picture me living in Basel on some days, too. But
<That's>
no, she loved it the last time we were there for a couple of days.
Lisa can picture me living on the moon someday. Only some days.
Some days.
Welcome back. I'm glad you had a great time. The accent was on fun, not on your accent. Anyway, good. Well, you can take us all on a tour sometimes, right? Top of Mind in Florida. What's going on?
Well, you know, recently we had a podcast featuring Steve Abrams talking about Tri-Rail. And spending all that time in Switzerland sort of reminded me, anybody who's been to Europe knows that their trains and their trams and everything are just incredible. And in Switzerland, every 5 minutes, there's a train or a tram coming by. They're immaculate. They're so clean. If they're a minute late, the Swiss have a fit, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, their mass transit is just incredible. And, you know, even their bicycle lanes and everything are just incredible. And at the same time, we have a state legislature which wants to defund Tri-Rail. We have the three counties, you know, Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County, and they had hoped someday the Treasure Coast as well, now struggling to figure out whether or not they can fund Tri-Rail. So instead of improving our mass transit, we're looking at potentially a year from now eliminating Tri-Rail.
Mm-hmm. Steve,
and taking the tens of thousands of people who use Tri-Rail every day and putting them on our... I know we have a lot of room on the interstate and on the turnpike.
Where?
And, you know, but so we're going to add all these people onto the interstate that's already overcrowded. I don't understand our thinking about mass transit.
Why do we never get it right?
Why do we never what?
Why do we never get it right?
You know, I think it goes all the way back to the 1950s when we started, you know, post-World War II, we started leaving the cities and developing suburbs. The Eisenhower administration created the interstate system, and we just became wedded to cars, and we abandoned any kind of mass transit. You know, most of the rail lines in Florida, if you drive all over, especially the center of the state, they're just shut down rail lines. So, you know, we became addicted to the car, and that's fine. There's nothing. I'm not saying we shouldn't, but. We should enhance that by having really good mass transit. I mean, you can hop on a high-speed rail in most other countries around the world and boom, bang, you're there, you know, without any problem. And we're just so far behind with that stuff.
Ironically, and we talked about it recently, driverless cars, at least as part of the mass transit answer, and more remote work, even though a lot of companies want their workers back, but staggered work to get work cars off the road ultimately would seem to have to be part of the answer, too. It's interesting that we have such a tug of war over that, Brian.
Well, I am all in on the driverless cars. If they ever get to that technology where it needs to be, and you know, there was a story done by the New York Times Magazine several years ago about the potential of driverless. And they started envisioning it as being more than just a car. You know, a driverless hotel room. You know, so instead of something that looked like a car, you'd have something that looked like a hotel room, a driverless bar. Imagine that. So, you know, so you could have all kinds of things now.
A driverless bar.
Yeah, think about that.
Great.
Well, they had a few other things that are a little X-rated, too, that could be driverless. But, you know, school buses that are driverless, but it also requires... It's not just as simple as having driverless cars. You have to have an infrastructure
exactly.
that changed. So the vision of it, which is probably something my grandchildren will see long before I see it, of what the potential of driverless cars is huge.
You remember the time you and I were coming back from an assignment in Miami? And I think the guy in the Uber said, listen, I'll show you. It's completely driverless.
Yeah.
It must have been near midnight. He gave us a brief demonstration. We're like, we get it.
Yes, on a very curvy.
Yeah, on a very curvy road heading up the interstate. And it was funny. The human instinct was the car did fine, but we're both still felt more comfortable when a guy we obviously never met
right.
had his hands on the wheel. So the human instinct is still, give me somebody behind the wheel. But as you said, our grandkids will say, whoever thought of something that's like, although in South Florida, I see lots of driverless cars on the road. They just have people at the wheel. So,
but instead of the state legislature denying funding for mass transit, they ought to be really stepping it up. I ought to be able to hop a train that takes me from here to Jacksonville or takes me from here to Tallahassee or from here to Pensacola at minimum.
Yeah.
And think of the number of cars we could take off the roads if we had really clean, good mass transit. Brightline has some...
It's a stab at that, but look at the financial issues they're facing.
Well, obviously there's financial issues because they don't get enough people getting on the trains. We have to get into... You see much fewer cars... In the cities in Switzerland than you do elsewhere because it's easier to get on mass transit. And frankly, so people are they're hopping on these trains and they're sitting there on their laptops and they're working or doing whatever, they're reading instead of fighting traffic. I wish we had more of that.
Some people say it's an unfair analysis. Switzerland, of course, you could fit into the pocket of this mammoth country. It'll just never work here because of size and scope and different geography. Do you buy that?
Well, sure, to some extent I buy that. We also have a lot more money than Switzerland does. But when you're looking
at
Tri-Rail...
Check the deficit lately?
When you're looking at Tri-Rail, you're looking at three counties who have a population similar to the size of Switzerland's.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it can be done. Of course, it's not just, our problems aren't just north-south. Our problems are east-west.
East-west.
And we just keep building. And everybody who's on the road complains about traffic,
So this is a guy who will go every road he can find to avoid getting on the interstate.
Absolutely. I would rather spend an extra 15, 20 minutes on back roads.
I know, because I've spent them with you at times.
Yes. And, on the when I do have to drive along the interstate, I just, it's just so unpleasant.
All right. Enough about transportation. What else top of mind? I am amazed that a political hound like you was able to get deep into a podcast without talking about a governor's race that is still a year away. But talk about it anyway.
Well, the governor's race is getting really hot. I mean, you have... Byron Donalds, who's raised, he's got $31.5 million, which is pretty good for a guy who just came out of the box a few months ago, got the support of Donald Trump, but that's certainly helped. We have former House Speaker
Paul Renner,
who's just recently announced that he's going to run and seems to feel like he hasn't raised a ton of dough yet, but he probably will do okay. But he seems very, very confident in his chances of winning the Republican nomination.
And why do you think that is? He's making a play, at least it seems early. Listen, I can be the one to appeal to a broader segment of the Republican Party. What is your take on that?
Well, I one of the things that happens when somebody becomes, House Speaker or Senate President, they see their portrait on the wall and they think the whole world knows who they are. Well, what they need to do is look at the older portraits on the wall and understand that nobody remembers who any of those folks are. And he's been out of office a year now. I, 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 I can't judge how his campaign's going to go. Today, most people would say he doesn't have a shot. Anybody who predicts elections this far out doesn't know what they're talking about. I don't care what polls you have. I don't care what issues you think you're discussing. A year from now is forever in every election cycle. And we've learned that time and time again. Renner just doesn't believe that Byron Donalds is the right person to succeed Ron DeSantis.
And then the lieutenant governor.
And Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins, who's been in the state, I don't know, five years plus. Nobody even had heard of him outside of his district that he was representing until he got appointed lieutenant governor. He hasn't formally announced he's running for governor yet, but he's all but said he's going to run. And then, of course, we have another wild card, Casey DeSantis,
mm-hmm.
who seems, it would appear, that she's less inclined to run than some people thought a few months ago. Ron DeSantis has kind of endorsed Jay Collins, his brand new lieutenant governor, but he hasn't given out a full endorsement. And, you know, the governor's going to find out over the next 6, 7, 8 months that his influence is going to rapidly decline. It happens to all governors who are leaving office, lame duck. And he has a huge personal problem there. This is a guy who, at best, had a middle income and suddenly found himself in a giant mansion with private planes, which he uses just about every day when you talk about waste and spending. Private guards, chefs in the mansion, and the entire staff, and you know, in a year, he's got to find a new place to live.
In fairness, you bring that up a lot. I push back a little bit because every governor gets that. It's not like he's the only one who gets that. So.
Sure.
And I suspect he'll have big donors to his preview race, which it seems to me that he's already running. But I want your take for 2028. Every policy, you see the triangulation on thinking ahead to 2028. Am I wrong?
Well, you know, anytime there's an open seat, you know, everybody thinks they can run for it. You know, does Ron DeSantis look in the mirror and see a president? Sure. There's a lot of people who look in the mirror and see a president. A lot of those mirrors crack by the time Election Day shows up. And if I'm not going to predict what's going to happen in the 2026 election, I'm sure as heck not going to predict what's going to happen in the 2028 election.
And you are always consistent on that.
We have a lot of, you know, we have an administration in the White House that's, let's just say, very different than previous administrations. You know, I think what some people are betting on, even in the governor's race, is that people will weary of Donald Trump, weary of some of the things he's doing, and decide that they want to change. It's possible that that some voters will start to think we need to go in a different direction. We'll see. We don't know yet. A lot's going to depend, and I say this every time, a lot's going to depend on where we are with the economy a year from now.
I want to talk about the economy a bit more, but on the flip side of the ledger, Democrats. We've talked a lot about Dave Jolly, the Republican-turned-Democrat who will be running, but talk on the Democratic side of the ledger for a governor's race that will be upon us quicker than we think. Don't throw anything at your at your YouTube screen, but it's the reality of politics. We'll be deep into this quicker than we think.
Well, Orange County Mayor Jerry Demings has all but announced he's running for David Jolly, and perhaps by the time this airs, he will have formally announced, but we're getting very close to him announcing. He's starting a movement he's calling the Believe campaign,
mm-hmm.
which I guess translates into believe in him for 2026. You know,
catchy.
And you know, I think he's not attacking Dave Jolly, the former Republican, former independent, now
former congressman,
and now Democrat who's running for the nomination. They both seem to be trying to run calm campaigns, or at least and present themselves as we're people who want to bring people together. We want to work on accomplishing goals that make everybody benefit. And I think they're trying to get away from some of the harsher rhetoric that you sometimes hear on the other side. We'll see how long that lasts.
Let's tie that all together. As we look to 2026, you have always talked about, as most political analysts do, it'll ultimately come down to how people feel about their pocketbook and their fundamental safety and security. Affordability crisis in Florida, will that gain the upper hand in terms of traction next year? We talk about it a lot, but we're so involved in culture wars and so many other things that can take our attention away from that. You still think economy in Florida will be the predominant issue?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, you know, Ron DeSantis, the governor, recently talked about how he's improved homeowners insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he's made some inroads that eventually will help with that, but the homeowner pays attention to the bill they get.
Mm-hmm.
And those bills have not gotten smaller. All of these bills are significantly higher than they were a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Add that to other economic issues, and that kind of thing can be particularly damaging to incumbents. Because you ultimately get the blame. You were in charge. My bills went up, you know. And so I think that the economy is just going to be a big, big issue in 2026.
Let me turn for a moment. I know you've got some other top-of-mind issues in this state. We don't have a podcast
Florida,
we don't have a podcast long enough for all the top-of-mind issues.
Nothing's ever going on here.
Something in the news I wanted to ask you about fundamentally. If Florida was a deep blue state, Same makeup, same demographics, same immigrant makeup. If we were a blue state, would we have National Guard on the streets, or at least the prospect, or at least the idea from the White House, oh, we might send the National Guard to Florida?
Well, the when you look at what's happening in Chicago and Portland and L.A.
Memphis, New Orleans.
You know, yes, there's the indication is that, sure, that if we were a deep blue state, that the that we would suddenly desperately need help from the White House with sending military troops and National Guard. You know, what I find more disturbing about that is, again, you know, our congressional leadership is silent. You know, people like to talk about what the founders intended. Well, the founders intended for Congress to be something that slows down the White House, that corrects the White House if they think it's going too far with something. Now, these leaders don't, there's so much silence about issues coming out of on both sides. You know, they need to take more actions, whether it's tariffs or military troops or a host of other issues, where they say those issues are the prerogative of the White House, of the Congress, not the White House. Or they need to ensure that the White House is following laws that were passed by Congress. That's what the founders intended.
Brian, let me ask you, though, and we've talked about this a lot over the years, and I hear it more and more, and I will tell you it concerns me. I have children and now a grandson. You have, obviously, you talk a lot about the children and the grandkids. Are all of us of our generation, in some sense, we're talking about the way political battles would have and should have been fought yesterday, but we live in a world where social media, or as I often call it, anti-social media, the internet, AI, the ability to create your own reality, as one writer put it, all of us living in our silo. I listen to my own reality and nothing else, even if it's a created, inaccurate one. Are our arguments just out of touch with the fact that some worry that we're just becoming unraveled because of all these changes that make it so hard to have any common narrative, any set of issues that we can at least agree on a set of facts? Are you and I talking about a yesteryear that is rapidly going over a cliff if it's not over it right now? Because it worries me.
Well, absolutely. But, you know, social media is having a huge impact on everything we do. Even things we buy at the store can be impacted by social media. And social media is not all bad. Social media can be an important tool. It's not the social media that's the problem. It's how people use it. If you say that the moon just turned green, and you put that on social media, and then you use AI to put a picture of a green moon out there, and everybody looks at it and says, "Oh my God, the moon has turned green. But nobody looks outside their window to say, no, the moon didn't turn green. And that's the, you know, we do a bad job of fact checking.
And it's, but how not, do you fact check?
Well, it's not that hard. Look, everybody.
No, but in a world it is where everybody can create their own reality every second. And
part of it has to start with education. Mm-hmm. We need to do a better job of teaching critical thinking. We need to do a better job of teaching a lot of the basics, frankly. I think some of the movement to go back to the basics in education is actually important. I think we got away from teaching a lot of the basics. We need to get back to, you know, encouraging people to question things that come up and not simply accept it. And it's more than just social media. I mean, this has been going on forever. You know, that's, you know, politicians have you know, made statements and run commercials and things that weren't true, and people by the millions accepted that long before social media.
Yeah, but the intensity is different now.
Yeah, well, social media enhanced it, but I'm just saying that there's something in the human mind that we grab for the things that we want to believe in.
Yeah, it's a never-ending debate, but if you look in the last 10, 15, 20 years and see the change. And I hear it all the time. People say they think we're a coarser, much coarser society, not that we didn't have issues before. The democratization of voices is wonderful, but it's now the democratization of a lot of strident voices. How do I cut through that if I even want to? I'm old-fashioned enough. I used to enjoy it. Brian Crowley was somebody I knew was out covering state government, knew what he was talking about. You may or may not agree with an opinion column, and I know you worked on the editorial and opinion side at times, but you at least knew that there were some chops there. You at least knew that people in the legislature weren't playing to a social media audience only. It's intriguing to me, and wrapping our arms around it, and especially for a student of politics like you, I think it's the great question and issue of our times right now.
Well, the media is changing too,
yeah.
especially print media. And, you know, you look at things like STET, Palm Beach mm-hmm. County.
Great group.
Great group. They kind of adopted the Axios model for reporting. You know, there's still strong media out there. And I think that the transition is, you know, print media has become our cell phone. Broadcast media has become, you know, cable news media for the most part. You know, Walter Cronkite, if he came back from his grave, and I'm sorry for those of you who don't know who Walter Cronkite is, probably wouldn't fit in today.
Yeah.
You know, well, he'd have to have if Walter Cronkite and some of the old guys that
Huntley
used to
Brinkley,
do this stuff,
yeah.
Huntley Brinkley, you know, came back today, they'd have their own podcast.
Right.
You know, they'd be, you know, it's the Joe Rogans of the world that are replacing that kind of stuff. So what you have to do, I think, is convince people that you want to listen to people who are giving you accurate information, having some fun with it, maybe sometimes like we do. But, you know, it's important to just not take everything and just believe it because you get it on social media.
It'd be nice if we listened more and talked past each other a lot less. But that's not the world we're in now, so your prescription's at least one of the things we have to think about. Again, we can talk all day long, but what else is on your plate that's top of mind that you want to speak about right now?
Oh, gosh, what else is on my plate?
That's a big plate.
You know, that's a big plate.
Besides lessons in how to do an accent in Switzerland.
Well, the other thing that's going on is we now have open carry in the state.
Yeah.
Now, I don't care. Now, a lot of people feel very strongly one way about the open carry. I just have one criteria for open carry. For those legislators who believe so passionately that every Floridian should have the right to have a gun on their hip, a rifle on their shoulder, but you can't bring it into the legislature. You can't sit there in the gallery with your rifle or your open carry. Well, why?
Well,
you don't feel safe?
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a minute. So, you know, it's one thing to talk a good game about that, but if you really believe it, invite them into the House and the Senate chambers.
I talked to Lori Berman recently, minority leader upcoming, who said, yes, not chambers, but she said, as it's written now, I'm not seeing anything that keeps him from bringing it into my office. And she was quite disturbed, her words, by that possibility. Sort of to your point.
Well, but I'm saying those who favor open carry should be pushing for allowing it in committee meetings, allowing it during legislative sessions in the gallery.
Yeah.
You know, if I walked into the Capitol tomorrow with a gun on my hip, they're going to take it away from me.
Mm-hmm.
Why? They passed the law. Why do they get an exemption?
The governor said, in effect, I think we're making too much of this. Other states have open carry. And the never-ending debate about Second Amendment rights. Your thoughts on that? Your pushback on that,
if any? I think one of the failures of those who support absolute Second Amendment rights is they haven't pushed hard enough for me to be allowed to get a tank. They haven't pushed hard enough for me to get my own fighter plane. I mean, it's still weapons. It's still Second Amendment, right? I don't think the Constitution limits it to rifles and pistols. So can I get a rocket launcher? I mean, why not?
On we go. We got about 4 or 5 minutes left in this episode.
Well, your turn. What's on your mind?
Well,
Mr. Interviewer.
It's our old roles from many years in the biz. No, I will tell you, I think, the AI issue, you know, I'm doing some work and I'm teaching at Lynn University. And you talk to students. I do think one of the great stories that we're going to be talking about a lot in the coming years, and we're talking about it now, is how do I fit into a world where AI can take over. One major company said we're getting rid of about a third of our managers. There was the recent hubbub over the AI-generated actress, and top Hollywood stars, including Oscar winners, are up in arms about it. What happens when it takes over your job? What happens when you can just program your goldfish to read you the news you choose and have an avatar and don't need news people, don't need news anchors, don't need accountants, don't need on and on and on. And I think it's fascinating and really, really scary. And I hear college students talking to me about it.
Yeah, what do they say?
They're worried, you know.
I mean, in what way?
Well, starters, what kind of job? How do I fit in? How do I make sure that I'm unique enough to bring the human empathy, that human experience to my work? And it's one of the things that, as faculty, we talk to the students a lot about, that we still believe, and perhaps it's naive of me, but I keep pressing that to bring that human experience, that human capital, that empathy, what makes you uniquely you. I still think there will be a market for that in whatever line of work you have, but it's still scary, and I didn't have to face that. So it's one thing for me to say that, but the dislocation on that's going to be interesting. But do I think you can replace the life experiences and the instincts of a Brian Crowley or of a young college-age student? No, I don't. How are others going to feel about that? What does it mean down the road?
What do they think about the media?
A media, you know, it's fractured to them. A lot of them, you know, when I walked in, I would say most of my students had no idea I'd ever worked in news. Some did, but not most. They tend to get the news off their phone. A lot of them said to me, you'll appreciate this. They said early on, and I'm a big believer in this, said, well, I remember early on, they said, well, I bet you don't believe in TikTok. I mean, in other words, you're an old fogey and TikTok would somehow be beneath you. And I said, and I could imagine you would have said the same thing. I said, no, it's not that. I said, I believe that there's always new vehicles. You and I wouldn't have been doing a podcast 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
Didn't exist. But I said, if you're choosing to be journalist, use TikTok as a vehicle where you amp up your game about telling a more textured, thoughtful story. You can still have fun, still do need interesting things, but you're choosing to bring a different standard to your work. I did get a few ahas and lights went off. So I think training that next generation of journalists and hoping that you make a little bit of a difference is fun. So again, it's not sitting here, you know, the sky is falling, but certainly we're living in times that were hard to imagine in terms of the speed of change. I think people almost in some instinct cower from it. It's so much, so fast. And you see heads spinning, even young, smart college students all the way to guys like me and you, I think. Do you agree?
Oh, sure. I mean, we're going through a huge change. We don't know what direction AI is going to go into. You know, there's all these stories now about all the energy they're going to require.
Yeah.
Are we going to have a lot of nuclear power plants in Florida? Are we going to have enough water in Florida if we had a big AI company want to develop here? It's a huge issue, and it's going to be interesting to see how it impacts us.
Yeah.
And frankly, as we look at this governor's race coming up, it's one of the questions that they should be asked. What should the role Florida play in AI? Should we have any role regulating AI? And our legislative leaders should be asked these questions as well. We can't sit on the sidelines. We need to, if it's not too late, get ahead of the curve. And have our leaders in Tallahassee help guide everybody in Florida on where we're going with AI in the Sunshine State.
Well, I kind of like this back-and-forth interview thing. Brian and I were in our roles so long as just a wonderful analyst, and I moderated our old program on WPTV, but it's fun. Listen, I think sometimes people at home wonder, when Brian and I are just sitting around chatting, these are the chats we have. And we're going to do this more often in our podcast series,
yeah,
Top of Mind Florida,
because
it's a lot of fun. I love hearing what you have to say. I especially love you. None of you obviously could see it at home when he cracked up everybody here with, again, I love you. I love you to pieces, but please go to school and learn proper accent.
I don't know what you're talking about there. I thought I did pretty well with it.
Your spirit was great. The accent, slight bit of work. Take it away, my friend. We've got plenty more to talk about in the weeks, months to come. We so appreciate that people are joining us on Top of Mind Florida. Final words, sir.
Well, just a thank you to everybody who's been watching and listening. It's really been fantastic, the reaction we've been getting, and I look forward to doing this for the weeks and months to come.
What accent are you going to use next time?
I don't know, but I'll come up with something, I assure you.
Take it away.
I'm done.
All the best. Good day.